Yeah, just to clarify with paragraph B on page 2, wondering about the status of any of these very part-time internship-type workers, if they would be qualify for anything that we may pass, such as sick and safe time and paid family leave. Just trying to clarify that, Madam Chair.
For the A2 amendment? Okay.
Yes.
Discussion. Representative Purcell to the A2.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I think right now there's still a lot of things up in the air, and I don't want to have any carve-outs or exclude any folks who might, even as an intern, get an injury or have a gravely sick family member. So I thank you for the amendment, and I recommend a no vote on the amendment.
I'd request a roll call.
All right, a roll call being requested. Any further discussion? Representative Burkle?
Yeah, just, you know, as an intern, it's a seven. Sorry, thank you, Madam Chair. The question I got for the author is, this is like a seven-month program, correct? So 90 days in, any prospective intern could qualify if something passed on the road here, right? I mean, I don't have a big issue with the fact that people who are sick need time off. I think that worked out, but if you're going to get into production ag, and as any of us here who have done it before know, there's days you got to get up and go to work when you got animals on the ground. And it might be part of the internship program. I mean, part of the experience would be the reality of boots on the ground, right? So I don't know what the current paid family leave bill says about internships. If there's anything in it now, maybe someone can answer that for me.
Representative Purcell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Burkle, I'm not an expert. I don't know either, and I think it's been changing as it goes. So I can't say, but I appreciate the fact that we need to get up and do things, especially on production agriculture, but also people's parents die. I mean, there's also stuff like that, and not that I don't think that the farms would work that out initially, but I'm not prepared to do a carve-out for a bill that doesn't exist. I'm not prepared to go there. Thank you.
All right. Representative Burkle?
Yeah, not to belabor it, but I appreciate that. I just think it's something to think about going forward. Thanks.
All right, further discussion. Representative Nelson?
And thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Purcell. I think, you know, it brings up an important question on, you know, with an internship, we usually, you know, it's educational. And so, I mean, while we don't have any other pieces of legislation before us, I think an important part would be at least, you know, considering, you know, if you're going to miss any significant amount of that, can the internship be extended or amended in any way so that, you know, if it's 7 months, you know, on this one, that, you know, you would still get the intern would still get, you know, the required amount of training or whatever it is, because I think one of the important parts of the internship is the learning and I think that's important. So just a point on that. So I think it's appreciate working on this to, you know, as we go forward.
Representative Purcell. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Nelson. I think that's a great point, and I would love to work with staff, especially if something does happen in the legislature this year, and figure out how this applies. I mean, a lot of conversations I've had with farmers in my district get to this exact thing, whether they're interns or whether they're seasonal employees, et cetera. So I have made a note of that, and I would love to work with staff, people smarter than me who understand how this might work out, but happy to follow up with you on how that might play out. Thanks. Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, again, just to clarify, then this bill will be held over, so there will be additional time to work on this and possibly do an amendment.
That's correct. This bill will be laid over. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion? Oh, roll call. A roll call being requested. A roll call. Matthew Seltzer.
Chair Bang.
No.
Bang, no. Vice Chair Purcell.
No.
Purcell, no. Lead Anderson.
Anderson, aye.
Anderson, aye. Representative Cha?
No.
Cha, no. Representative Frederick?
No.
Frederick, no. Representative Anderson? or sorry, Anderson. Sorry, Representative Hansen.
No.
Hansen, no. Representative Ream?
No.
Ream, no. Representative Sensor-Murra? Excused. Representative Tabke?
No.
Tabke, no. Representative Burkle?
Burkle, aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Harder?
Aye.
Harder, aye. Representative Jacob?
Jacob, aye.
Jacob, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye.
There being seven no's and five ayes and one excuse, the nays have it. The motion does not prevail. The A2 amendment is not adopted. I don't see any further amendments. Is that correct, Representative Purcell?
Correct.
Okay.
I'd love to present the bill.
Okay. So, yeah, we'll do that right after we're done with the amendment. So I don't see any further amendments, so we'll move on to testimony. Representative Purcell, to your bill as amended.
Thank you.
As not amended, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm proud to present House File 1747, the Next Generation Farmer Program Bill, previously championed by my predecessor, Representative Todd Lippert, and Senator Mike Goggin, and initially conceptualized by the Central Minnesota Young Farmers Coalition. The average age of Minnesota farmers is now 60 years old, and this is quickly becoming a crisis in the ag industry that we all know. As we try to figure out how to hire and retain the next generation of people who will be stewards of our land and water while growing essential food, fuel, fiber, and flowers into the future. Younger people, particularly from urban areas, simply don't know about the opportunities for careers in agriculture. The paid internship model has been used to attract and train workers in construction, building trade fields for several decades, and is a great basis for establishing a similar program for farming. House File 1747 establishes a Next Generation Farmer Development Program that provides grants up to $10,000 for qualified interns who work on a farm, who have less than 5 years of farming experience, and have an interest in working in the agricultural industry. Grants may not exceed 50% of the wages paid to the intern, and farm operations must pay at least the state's minimum wage, and the grant can supplement so that the intern can make $15 an hour. The employment time frame is no more than 7 months, and interns can't be eligible more than twice in 5 years. Grantees must keep records of all activities that the interns do and must submit a report within 60 days of the end of the program, as well as repay any unexpended funds. Minnesota Department of Agriculture must report annually to the legislature by March 15th of every year about how the program funds are being used and what outcomes are being achieved. And I believe there are a few testifiers to speak to this bill, and so now, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn it over to them.
All right. First testifier is Maddie Hyde from Land Stewardship Project via Zoom. If you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Good morning. I hope you can all hear me okay. To the chair and committee members, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Maddie Hyde, and I work at Open Hands Farm in Northfield, Minnesota. It's a 17-acre
Maddie, if you can please speak up into your mic as we're having audio issues here in the committee room.
Are you able to hear me now?
Yes, much better.
Great. Okay, I'll speak up. Yes, to the chair and committee members, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Maddie Hyde, and I work at Open Hands Farm, a 17-acre vegetable farm in Northfield, Minnesota, owned by Ben Doherty and Aaron Johnson, and I'm also a Land Stewardship Project member. And when I first started working at Open Hands a year and a half ago, I was really blown away by the scale and efficiencies of Ben and Aaron's operation, and I've been so lucky to learn something new every day on the farm, and while helping provide healthy produce to thousands of Minnesotans. And as a young person interested in farming, it's so valuable to me to learn directly from experienced farmers who are truly great at what they do. But what concerns me is that the average age of a farmer in Minnesota is 60 years old and climbing every year. That means that over the next couple of decades, we're set to lose a generation's worth of skill and wisdom and mentorship opportunities that are gained from lifetimes spent working on the land. And one thing that I know for sure is that to farm well, to be highly efficient while caring for the land, takes a depth of knowledge that can take an entire career to build. And this is why mentorship and training opportunities are really important to me as a young farmer, especially paid opportunities. because those young farmers were really up against a lot, and it can be difficult to see a viable future for myself in this field. It can also be difficult to make ends meet on a farm worker's wage. That's why more training opportunities like the Next Gen Farmer Development Program would really go a long way to helping me and other young farmers like myself see a future for ourselves in this field. I'm asking you all to support this in the future of Minnesota's farmers. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Maddie. Our next testifier is Matthew Fitzgerald from Land Stewardship Project. If you could identify yourself before the committee, proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today about the Next Generation Farmer Development Program. I'm calling in from my farm shop where I'm working on my planter, so take heart, committee members and chair, spring is coming. My name is Matthew Fitzgerald, and I am a second-generation farmer in McLeod County. I farm in the Hutchinson and Glencoe areas, and I raise organic corn, soybeans, wheat, and other grains on approximately 2,500 acres. Our grains end up in products like Annie's Mac and Cheese, Prairie Vodka, and Seneca Green Giant frozen peas. Our family's farm would not exist today if it were not for the generosity and mentorship of others. My folks started this farm 20 years ago as first-generation farmers with 200 acres and borrowed money on a 4440 tractor. Raising organic crops was not cool at that time, and their success was absolutely rooted in the gift of mentorship from other organic farmers. They received invaluable advice on how to set up equipment, where to market crops, and what to do with an unexpected hailstorm that destroyed a soybean crop. The one-to-one connections and learning is what kept our farm going. Today, a core guiding principle is to help others in the industry. I often say that farming is like the mafia. You need to know somebody or have a lot of money to get into it. The Next Generation Farmers Development Program tackles this problem head on by creating a meaningful structure for training, solving that problem for how to meet somebody and how to know something. Moreover, the cost share component helps offset the countless hours spent from an employer's perspective for developing training and taking the longer road to show how the inner workings of a farm can be successful. This is the kind of work that I would expect that the state of Minnesota would champion. I know firsthand that mentorship takes work, and this is something we do on our farm. We hire local FFA students and local high school students, host educational tours with local colleges, and invest in our own employees with continuing training. There is a tremendous challenge, as Maddie outlined, in the next decade of farming. As farmers age out of their work, and all around me, I see local co-ops and egg businesses with lots and lots of opportunities. This program creates a pathway to solve for the problem. I would not be here today to testify as a successful farmer without the help and mentorship of others, and I stand on the shoulders of giants. I ask the members of this committee to join me in supporting the Next Generation Farmer Act. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. Our next testifier is John Beaton from Fairhaven Farm. If you can please identify yourself before the committee, proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. Yes, my name is John Beaton, and I operate a diversified farm business just north of Duluth, Minnesota, and where we grow vegetables, and we also grow starter plants and operate events on our farm. And I'm here to speak in favor of the Next Generation Farmer Development Program. And I just want to share a little bit about my story and why having that direct relationship to the farm that you're learning from, like a farm mentor, is very important. So I began my farming journey in 2012, where I'm a first-generation farmer. And so I started working for a large vegetable operation. And Rick, the farm owner, was able to teach me everything that I now know. And just to give you kind of like an example of how powerful this direct one-on-one or kind of mentorship can be. So like I said, I'm a first-generation farmer. Well, I worked for Rick for 3 seasons. The first season was as a kind of intern, where I accepted a very meager wage, and then I lived on site in the summer to kind of offset that smaller wage. And within 3 years of working for Rick, I was able to launch my own farm business operating on Rick's land. So, and that having that space to do that was what made that possible. And knowing that Rick was there to help me along the way the entire time was what made that possible. So as we look for ways to encourage the next generation of farmers to get into the trade and learn, I think it's very important to have and encourage these types of programs and experiences. And I think the only way or the best way to learn to farm is to farm. There's no real substitutes, be it online resources, university programs are helpful, but they're, like I say, the only way to learn to farm is to farm and to be there for an entire season and see it start to finish, and learn from those folks that have spent their life developing the systems that work for them in their context. So in speaking in support of this Next Generation Farmer Development Program, and I also know that this program is based off of an existing model that they have an operation in Colorado, again spearheaded by the folks at the National Young Farmers Coalition. So I'm happy to speak in support of it and let you all know that I, as a farmer and business owner now, would gladly use this program and help support the next generation of farmers as well. So thank you.
Thank you, John. Seeing no more testifiers, we'll move to discussion. Discussion to the bell. Seeing none, closing remarks, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My hope is that this bill may help remove at least one of the barriers for the next generation of farmers that we so desperately need to carry on the rich and vibrant tradition of agriculture in Minnesota. I hope this program has or will earn your support, and thank you for your thoughtful questions and dialogue today on this important topic.
All right. Representative Purcell, we need her motion that House File 1747 be laid over for possible inclusion. House File 1747 is laid over. The next, we will switch. The next bill is House File 1057.
And when you are ready, you may move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 1057 be laid over for possible inclusion. Madam Chair, I also have the A1 amendment, which makes changes to the reporting to include disaggregated data on race, ethnicity, and gender. It also makes the grant eligible to only emerging farmers and gives more time to more time for the department to spend the grants. That is my A1 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Vangs. Representative Vang moves the A1 amendment to House File 1057 for possibly to be laid over for inclusion in the Agriculture Omnibus Bill. So to the A1 amendment, Representative Vang.
Yes, that is my amendment, and I am happy to take any questions to the A1.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Vang, I'm a little surprised you offered this amendment. We have farmers all over the state who could use this help in a big way. Land prices are extremely high all over the state, and to only offer this to a small group of farmers in the state, to me, is not the way we should go. I think we all face, or all young farmers face, the challenges of financially getting into the business, and I think that this could be used by farmers, young farmers all over the state. And I don't agree with limiting it to a smaller group of these people. So I do not support the amendment, and I would ask that you would reconsider it.
Representative Vang. Thank you, Representative Anderson, for your concern. And I do agree there are a lot of great needs that a lot of farmers have. And with the ag budget being very limited, I want to make sure that we target farmers with the greatest need. And so that is why I have this amendment. And young farmers are still included within emerging farmers as well. Reed Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Well, this budget, yeah, it's small, but the state surplus is huge, and I would hope that we're fighting for all we can get to fund some of these programs. And you carried this last year. It was very successful. And to build on that, and you're asking for additional funding as well. But again, you know, all emerging or young farmers face these challenges, and I just think it should be available to young farmers all over the state. And those are my thoughts, Madam Chair.
Representative Vang. I agree, Representative Anderson, and I'm happy to continue to work with you on the language, and but I will ask members of the committee to support the A1. Any other discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing no additional discussion.
I would ask for a roll call, Madam.
Thank you. A roll call being requested. If there's no additional discussion, roll call will be taken on the A1 amendment.
Representative Vang.
Aye.
Vang, aye. Vice Chair Purcell.
Aye.
Purcell, aye. Lead Anderson.
Anderson, no.
Anderson, no. Representative Cha.
Aye.
Cha, aye. Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Ream?
Aye.
Ream, aye. Representative Sensormura?
Aye.
Sensormura, aye. Representative Tabke?
Aye.
Tabke, aye. Representative Burkle?
Burkle, no.
Burkle, no. Representative Harder?
No.
Harder, no. Representative Jacob?
Jacob, no.
Jacob, no. Representative Nelson?
No.
Nelson, no.
There being 8 ayes
and 5
noes, the A1 is adopted. Representative Vang, please describe your bill as amended. Madam Chair, I believe we have further amendments too, so I would like to go through all the amendments and then we can talk about discussion to the bill. Okay, will do. Representative Anderson, I believe you bring the A2 amendment.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Again, just recognizing that especially in greater Minnesota, where acreages tend to be larger and the cost of purchasing this land is quite high, I offer the A2 that would double the size of the grants for a young farmer or emerging farmer purchasing over 40 acres of land, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Vang. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson. I do agree with part of the amendment of purchasing up to 40 acres of farmland, but I'm not sure about the second part of the amendment. So I would like to have some time to discuss with you to understand some of that language first before I accept the amendment. So I will ask members to not support it. Any additional discussion to the A2 amendment? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Well, it only changed a couple of lines, so which part could you agree with and which part could we work on further, Madam Chair?
Representative Vang. I think the first part, the purchasing up to line 1.5, purchasing up to 40 acres of farmland. Representative Anderson.
Well, we don't need this amendment for a farmer to purchase 40 acres of land. It would increase the payment, so that doesn't really do much. Thank you.
Representative Vang. Thank you, members. I will ask members to, Representative Anderson, I'm happy to continue to work on the amendment with you. And for now, I will ask members to not support the amendment.
Any additional discussion on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay.
Nay.
No. The amendment does not pass. We have another amendment, which I believe is from Representative Harder. Representative Harder, would you like to explain the A3 amendment?
Thank you, Vice Chair Purcell. Chair Vang. So my amendment addresses a couple of things. So, and I will request a roll call, please. Thank you. So on the first page, under page one, the line seven, it deletes everything after the period and inserts, to the extent practical, the commissioner may prioritize grants to emerging farmers. And then under same page, line 10, delete everything before the word for. And then the last part is to delete everything after farmer, and it's to add existing language from Minnesota Statute 17.055, which talks about emerging farmers, and in it, it lists who that may be. It states farmers or aspiring farmers who are women, veterans, persons with disabilities, American Indian or Alaska Natives, members of a community of color, young and urban, and any other emerging farmers as determined by the commissioner. And the reason for the change on that one is to be consistent with what's here and consistent what we already have in statute. So that is my amendment.
Thank you, Representative Harder. Representative Vang?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Harder, for your amendment. My amendment already addresses, I believe, what you're trying to get at, Representative Harder, to prioritize emerging farmers. And so I will, it'll be a bit redundant or perhaps weaken the already amended bill. So I will ask members to not support it.
Any additional discussion to the A3 amendment? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, just for some clarification, we've been talking about two different adjectives here, one an emerging farmer and the other a young farmer. So by your account, are we talking about the same thing, or are there different definitions for each of those terms, Madam Chair?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Anderson, a young farmer is included as an emerging farmer.
Representative Anderson. Any additional discussion to the A3 amendment? Seeing none, a roll call has been requested. So roll call will be taken on the A3 amendment.
Representative Vang?
No.
Vang, no. Vice Chair Purcell?
No.
Purcell, no. Lead Anderson?
Anderson, aye.
Anderson, aye. Representative Cha?
No.
Cha, no. Representative Frederick?
No.
Frederick, no. Representative Hansen?
No.
Hansen, no. Representative Ream?
No.
Ream, no. Representative Sensormura?
No.
Sensormura, no. Representative Tabke?
No.
Tabke, no. Representative Burkle?
Burkle, aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Harder?
Aye.
Harder, aye. Representative Jacob?
Jacob, aye.
Jacob, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye.
With five ayes and eight noes, the amendment does not pass. The next amendment before us is the A6 amendment, which I believe is brought to us by Representative Anderson. To the amendment.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. And I, when trying to think of amendments that could be offered to, again, help farmers in greater Minnesota, you know, a lot of land purchases out there are a quarter section or a half a section, and a smaller parcel would be an 80-acre chunk of land, which is just half of a quarter section. So that's an ideal way for a young farmer to get started purchasing an 80 or a quarter section from a neighbor or relative. And so this is offered again with the hope of, on some of these larger acreage purchases, mainly in greater Minnesota, giving a little bit of a bump up a higher incentive to those young farmers that purchase that little bit bigger tract of land, Madam Chair.
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson, for the amendment. I see this similar to the A2, the one that you did earlier, so I would like to continue to still work on the language, and so I will ask members to vote no for the time being.
Any additional discussion to the A6 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say nay.
No.
No.
The nays have it, and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Vang, please introduce your bill as amended.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is additional language to improve on the program that we started last session. It became quite a popular program for many beginning and emerging farmers. I believe I heard from the department that once they opened the application, they had to close it within the hour because they have exceeded the amount of grants they could go to. So this is a popular bill, and I would like to continue to improve to make sure that we target the farmers who with the greatest need to make sure they have access to land. As we all heard from many emerging and young farmers and beginning farmers of how access to land is one of the greatest challenges to sustaining and starting a farm. We should continue to look at how we can continue to improve on the program and make sure that it helps the farmers and makes the greatest impact to farmers in need.
Thank you, Representative Vang. And I believe we can move to testimony. We have at least one remote testifier. Our first testifier, Zoe Holloman. If you're able to identify yourself, properly pronounce your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Zoe Holloman. First, I'll thank you, Committee Chair Vang, and members of the committee, especially to those who listen to the needs of marginalized, and in particular, farmers of color. My name is Zoe Holloman. I am a member of Root Springs Farm Cooperative in Annandale, Minnesota, in Wright County, and I also live in Northeast Minneapolis. We grow apples, pears, and plums. We raise chickens, and we offer respite to people of color and LGBT communities. I am also a founding member of the Midwest Farmers of Color collective organization with over 100 farmers and gardeners of color in Minnesota, organizing for racial equity in our food and farming system to honor our community's past, present, and future. We host farmer-led collaborative projects, provide policy education. We gather information and priorities from farmers of color in Minnesota and in the Midwest for advocacy. Since we first established our organization in the beginning of 2020, a lack of access to land tenure has been the single biggest issue discussed by our farmers. As pointed out in the Emerging Farmer Report in 2020, while people of color make up over 20% of the population, farmers of color are less than 1% of the farmers in the state. That is not because we don't like farming, but rather due to historic and current day discrimination to accessing land and other resources to support us as experienced and emerging farmers. Over 80% of Midwest Farmer of Color Collective farm members rent or lease land, usually for between 1 and 4 years at a time. And most have had to make significant investments in the soil to prepare it for growing a crop, only to have it taken away when the landowner sells or increases the rent. Investing in land we don't own costs us significantly, and the thought of starting over with a new piece of land is extremely discouraging. For example, one of our member groups, Tuime, a Kenyan women's farming cooperative, was leasing farmland in Corcoran, Minnesota for 2 years. They were growing for local farmers markets and had heavily invested in compost and other soil improving materials during that time. The owner of the land decided to sell earlier this year, and now they will have to find new land and are losing the value of the soil investments and their labor that they made, and will miss this growing season. We also have many urban farmers who lease lots in Minnesota and St. Paul and generally face similar problems with short-term leases. We are asking for you to support the down payment assistance grant program, this bill with A1 amendments. We would like to see a 30-day application window, prioritizing farmers of color, since only 33% of the recipients last time around were categorized as emerging farmers and BIPOC farmers, and data collection for what type of emerging farmer they are for reporting to the legislature to better understand who is accessing the resource. We need funds like this to help farmers of color have access to land tenure, a basic resource for our farming businesses and land stewardship, and a major racial equity issue for our state and nation. The amendments listed provide specific ways that the Farm Down Payment Assistance Grant Program can give farmers of color a chance, something that we hope you all of you support. The retiring of many baby booming farmers and COVID showed us all that we need to invest in new and emerging farmers and in a strong regional food system. Farmers of color are fighting for that chance, often working other jobs in addition to farming just to afford to farm.
Ms. Holloman, if you're able to wrap up your testimony, please.
Yes. The Midwest Farmers of Color Organization and our allies are doing many other things to help give farmers of color a fighting chance, provide healthy food to our communities, reinvesting in our local economy, and largely practicing sustainable growing methods. We all need the benefits that come with that. Please support the Down Payment Assistance Grants Bill with the A1 amendments. Thank you to the committee for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Our second testifier is Naima Dor, and please pronounce your name properly for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Vang and members. My name is Naima Dore. I am a first generation farmer from Somalia. I started farming with my family in 2016. And, you know, we've been moving around since then because of the challenges accessing land, in addition to the cost that comes with starting a farm from ground up. But I'm happy to share with you that we recently purchased the farm. It's been a month now, but unfortunately, we were not able to access the down payment assistance program. Initially, we had issues with glitch with the submitting our application, and for that reason we were placed on a wait list, and we did not receive that grant in a timely manner during our purchasing process. I think this is a great program. I think it works, but unfortunately many of us who submitted the application we're not able to access, especially being a farmer for such a long time and waiting for this great opportunity. It's unfortunate that many of us were not able to receive the support. Today I'm asking that you support the amendment and like many others before me that spoke on, I guess the theme today is supporting young farmers and how do we continue that. Collectively, I think this program and other programs like are just great to lift up emerging farmers like myself, young farmers like myself that are passionate about doing the work. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Dora. Any other testifiers? Any other folks willing to testify on behalf for or against the bill? Seeing none, we will move into member discussion. Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Vang, for bringing this bill. I have a couple questions. One is, this is probably a question for MDA, but I'm wondering, last year with this application process, do we have any statistics about how many more people applied for the grant than could be awarded, or how much more money was asked for than was awarded?
Representative Vang?
and phoning a friend from the Department of Agriculture. If you would identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This question would be best suited to the department.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Matt McDevitt. I'm the Ag Finance Supervisor for the Rural Finance Authority. As far as the applications go, we cut it off right about 100, knowing that we were only going to be able to fund approximately 33.
And so there was a 33 at each of them receiving how much? 15,000?
Mr. McDevitt.
Okay. Madam Chair, representatives, every grant that was applied for was for the maximum, which is currently 15,000.
Representative Sensenbrenner?
Yeah, thank you. I guess I'm wondering about if there's a different way to administer the system, because I understand that, you know, wanting to cap it when you know, but I think it'd be helpful for us to have data about how many more people were wanting to receive the funding, because, you know, I heard the testifiers say, and it definitely sounds like it from what you were able to capture, that there's definitely more of a need, but I think that would help us make, you know, as we think about how we're wanting to spend the funding that we have and the investments that we're wanting to make, it would help us to have data about how great the need is compared to what we are currently funding.
Mr. McDevitt?
Madam Chair, members, yeah, for sure. I mean, that being said, I think that was within the first maybe 5 days or so that we got like 100 applications. So, you know, that equates to probably 1.5 million that we could have gone through in just about a week worth of applications. And if we had kept it over longer, as people identify farmland, I'm sure there would have been more interest even than that. We probably could have easily gotten up to maybe 2.5 million or so in the first year. So, I mean, the need is most certainly there.
Thank you. And then my other question is just about the application window timeline. I heard some of the testifiers asking for a 30-day application window. I know you said five. Five's not, you know, very long, right, especially if you're kind of just here about the program or something like that. So how are you all thinking about the administration of that this year?
Mr. McDevitt.
Madam Chair, members, those discussions are ongoing, exactly how we're going to go about it. You know, going the first time through here was kind of, we just determined to do kind of a first come, first serve basis type situation, because we really didn't entirely know what to expect. So now that we kind of have a little bit better idea, we'll be discussing this with stakeholders, and also depending on any bills that pass that direct us one way or another, how we'll approach it come January or July 1st of this year of 2023.
Representative Sensenbrenner?
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Vang, I'm still trying to understand your amendment. And I'm going back to the original bill language of 1057, where you set aside half of it for emerging farmers, and then the others, any remaining funds to go to any eligible farmer. And I'm just wondering now, with your amendment, what eligible farmers will not be eligible anymore for this assistance?
Representative Vang. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, in terms of eligibility, it's based off of the beginning farmers tax credit eligibility. And so I think the definitions between emerging farmers and beginning farmers are pretty closely and pretty similar. I can't think of what exactly an individual farmer that won't be able to apply to the amended language as of now. But the definitions are fairly similar.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So would somebody who is 40 years old and has been in 4-H a lot of their younger years and filed 10 Schedule Fs through their lifetime of work, would they be eligible for this assistance?
Representative Vang?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I can leave this to Matt McDevitt to answer.
Mr. McDevitt.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, the biggest hurdle on this one here is previously owning farmland and having a gross farm income of under $250,000. So in your scenario, if that 40-year-old farmer had never, them or their spouse had never been an owner of agricultural land, and any farming they did previously was under $250,000 gross income, they would qualify for the program.
Representative Anderson?
So even with the way the bill was amended, they qualify, to your understanding?
Mr. McDevitt.
Madam Chair, members, as I understand the amendment, there's a certain set aside for the emerging farmer
No, it's all set aside for the emerging farm.
Indeed, yes, it's 100% set aside. So then, yes, at that point, they would not. And then once we got to, I think it was like sometime March, if that money had not all been claimed, then yes, they would qualify for it.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
No further questions.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if this is for Chair Vang or Mr. McDevitt, but these grants, they're kind of sounds like they're on a first-come, first-served basis and not really looking at the need. Because I think we've heard some, you know, from testimony today that, you know, there's probably some that maybe have more, would be maybe more of a need. And we got to be careful when you do means testing. But at the same time, I'm wondering if, you know, also when a piece of property comes up for sale, you know, if we've had essentially a five-day window that it's open, that somebody's applied for the grants, I'm wondering if we should be looking at having, whether it's competitive or how to change this program to really better meet the needs. Because an individual may not know that maybe the piece of land they're leasing is going to be coming for sale. Maybe there's been a death in the family or something that happens, and you know, now it's for sale, but now there's not an opportunity to apply for this. And so I'm just wondering, you know, either Chair Vang or Mr. McDevitt, what are your thoughts on how we can improve this?
Representative Vang. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Nelson. You and I share the same concern, too. We want to make sure that it targets the farmers with the greatest need, and so I'm happy to continue to work on that with you. As of now, the solution is a first-come, first-served basis, and with the amendment, hopefully that can be more targeted. But if you would like to have a better language, I'm happy to work with you on that, too. Representative Nelson, any other discussion to the bill, members? Okay, seeing no additional discussion, Representative Vang, closing remarks.
Nope. Thank you, members, for your time and opportunity, and this is a good bill.
All right.
And Madam Chair, I move that House File 1057, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. Chair Vang renews her motion that House File 1057 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over.
And Madam Chair, I also want to recognize the amount of time that we have for today's committee, and I know that there are testifiers who came out of town, so I'm happy to save my bills for to come after the grain indemnity bill. And so, Representative Cha, if you're ready, we can move to your bill first so that we can respect the testifiers who've come out of town to be here today.
Okay, Representative Cha, I've been instructed that I needed to gavel Representative Vang's bill for potential inclusion to be laid over. So the bill is laid over.
All right, we have House File 2718, Representative Cha on the grain indemnity account. I will move that House File 2718 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Cha, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Vang and members of this committee. I'm proud to present Senate File 2718 to establish a grain indemnity fund in Minnesota. After years of elevator collapse and some devastating stories from farm families, some of whom you'll hear from today in testimony, which will help finally provide meaningful protection to producers who sell grain in Minnesota. When farmers sell grain in an elevator, they don't often collect payment right away. In effect, they're extending credit to the elevator. Seven times since 2015, the elevators go under and are not able to pay farmers. In any business, that's devastating. But in farming, you work all year to market your crop. And once you do, you have to pay your inputs and invest in the upcoming year. Not getting paid for for delivered grains puts farmer in an incredible difficult position. At present, there is a system in law intended to protect producers. The state mandates that elevators purchase bonds. Unfortunately, these bonds only pay out literally cents on the dollars, an average of 11 cents on the dollar across recent failures. Not only that, but they pay that out in years later once all claims are in and bankruptcy is settled. According to MDA, farmers have gone bankrupt waiting for payouts of these bonds. The indemnity fund proposed under my bill would protect producers, allowing for reimbursement immediately upon confirming that a claim is eligible. And while payments would be scaled based on how long farmers leave grain at the elevator, it would offer far more than the cents on the dollars afforded under our current system. Now you may ask, why should we have a program that's specific to funding elevators? The big reason is that we need this. Much like a bank, grain elevators hold community wealth. When they go under, they aren't just consequences for business, but all those farms and entrusted themselves in the grain, and Minnesota families and communities are hurt on the bag. You might also ask, why should we act on an indemnity fund when we could put more protection in place and increase regulation? Well, first, because the legislature has tried that. In 2019, the legislature tightened regulations on grain buyers, requiring more frequent audits and other requirements. Pipeline Food had just submitted their audit before they went bankrupt, leaving farmers in lurch of unpaid bills. Again, leaving families stranded. There may be additional regulatory tools to prevent failures, and this committee should consider them. But they are absolutely no substitute for the protection provided by an indemnity fund. Finally, just a couple important details on my proposal before I turn it over to my testifiers. First, I'm proposing seeding this fund with $5 million, ensuring the fund is solvent and protecting producers from day one. Second, when fees would be assessed under this bill, they'd be only assessed on the first sale. That is from a producer to an elevator. Third, there's an opt-out provision. Producers can contact the department and get their money back in exchange for protection from the fund. They can also opt back in to the indemnity fund. Fourth, there are new penalties. Grain buyers who don't comply with this law would face up to $7,500 per day per infraction. And finally, I want to address the long-term funding mechanism for this fund. Premiums assessed on sold grain. Premiums would only be assessed in years when the fund dips below $9 million and until the fund caps at $15 million. They would be capped at an absolute maximum of $20 on every $10,000 of market grain, but they would likely be much lower. To build a fund up to $15 million from $5 million, the department estimates they'll need to assess $7 on every $10,000 of market grain in 1 year's time. That's pretty good and pretty cheap insurance for our farm producers. This is a good bill with bipartisan support, and we're not figuring this out for the first time on our own in this committee. In fact, we're following 14 other states, and it's time that we catch up and protect Minnesota families and producers. With that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
All right, I do see we have amendments, and so we'll go quickly through amendments and then we can go to testimony. We have the A2 amendment from Representative Anderson to the A2. Would you like to move your amendment, Representative Anderson?
I'd like to move the amendment, Madam Chair. The A2 simply brings this bill into the same funding mechanism as we've heard over in the Senate. It would make the state contribution the $15 million with this amendment, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Cha.
I would like to keep it at $5 million, and I encourage a no on this amendment. Thank you.
Further discussion?
I'd ask for roll call, Madam Chair.
A roll call being requested. Seeing no further discussion, Matthew Seltzer.
Chair Vang.
No.
Vang, no. Vice Chair Purcell.
No.
Purcell, no. Alita Anderson.
Anderson, aye.
Anderson, aye. Representative Cha.
No.
Cha, no. Representative Frederick. No. Frederick, no. Representative Hansen.
No.
Hansen, no. Representative Ream.
Ream, no.
Ream, no. Representative Sensor-Murra.
No.
Sensor-Murra, no. Representative Tabke. Tabke excused. Representative Burkle.
Burkle, aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Harder.
Aye.
Harder, aye. Representative Jacob.
Jacob, aye.
Jacob, aye. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no.
There being 8 no's and 5 a's, the motion to adopt the A2 amendment is not adopted. The next amendment we have is the A3. That is, I believe, Representative Harder. Would you like to move your amendment into your yes. A3?
Yes, Chang. Yes, Chair Vang, I will move the amendment and ask for a roll call, please.
A roll call being requested to the A3.
Thank you, Chair Vang. Representative Cha. So in your bill, you do have an opt-out in there for producers. The opt-out that I wish to include in the bill is that a producer could opt out on the front end. So if a producer does not want to partake in the program, they can opt out at the front end, fill out the form, and not be a part of the program, where right now I believe it is that they'd be a part of the program, and then they would have to opt out, fill out forms, and get their fees back. So that is my amendment, is to have the option to opt out at the front end.
Representative Cha?
Thank you, Representative Harder, for your amendment, and thank you for the discussion that we had. I would like to work with you on this, but at this time I'm going to advise a no vote on this amendment. And let me see here. Seeing like this changes like how the opt-out currently works, and this requires MDA to maintain lists of producers with opt-out, and so grain buyers can consult with the list and not charge them premium. The problem here is that it doesn't require those producers that opt out to repay the fund to participate, leading into the potential of gaming. But I understand you as a grain producer, and I value your experience, and at this time, I would encourage no, but I would like us to have an offline conversation to continue this.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like this idea better, the opt-out in the front end than the back end. And I think with today's modern technology and computers, it wouldn't be that difficult to have a list where the opt-out would be on the front end and not the back end. But I agree that this may be doesn't have the provisions worked out yet for allowing a farmer back in or how long he would be ineligible after that would happen. So I would appreciate working with you along with Representative Harder on this amendment and look at it further as this bill is being held over. So thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, roll call being requested. Matthew Seltzer.
Chair Vang.
No.
Vang, no. Vice Chair Purcell.
No.
Purcell, no. Lead Anderson.
Anderson, aye.
Anderson, aye. Representative Cha?
No.
Cha, no. Representative Frederick? Frederick, no. Representative Hansen?
No.
Hansen, no. Representative Ream?
Ream, no.
Ream, no. Representative Sensor-Murra?
No.
Sensor-Murra, no. Representative Tabke?
No.
Tabke, no. Representative Burkle?
Burkle, aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Harder?
Aye.
Harder, aye. Representative Jacob?
No, Jacob, aye.
Jacob, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye.
There being 8 no's and 5 ayes, the nays have it. The motion does not prevail. The A3 amendment is not adopted. We have the A4 from Representative Jacob. Would you like to move your amendment?
Well, thank you, Chair Vang. Yeah, I'd like to move the A4 amendment. And the amendment simply on page 6, line 22, it changes the word may to must in order to provide certainty that the premium blinks off when the account is fully funded. Seems to make good sense.
Representative Cha.
Thank you, Representative. Jacob, I think it's a good amendment. I encourage a yes vote. Thank you.
All right, further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the A4 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say nay. The ayes have it. The motion prevails. The A4 amendment is adopted. We have the A5. Representative Burkle, please move your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A5 amendment, Representative Chow, you mentioned gaming the system, and we had this conversation earlier today. Just changes the 90 days on 7.32, line 7.32, from 90 to 120 days. And I'm, you know, glad to hear this is going to be laid over. We can have more discussion as things progress on some of the other issues, but this seems like a smart way to make sure nobody's gaming the system and jumping in.
Representative Shaw.
Thank you, Representative Burkle, for that conversation and for this amendment. I encourage a yes vote. Thank you.
All right. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no. The ayes have it. The motion prevails. The A5 amendment is adopted. The A6, Representative Anderson, would you be offering that one?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and let's keep the streak going here. Yeah, when I first carried this bill a couple of years ago, my main concern was the voluntary extension of credit. If a farmer hauled his harvest in the fall and didn't get his check until January for tax purposes. And on line, page 3, line 30 of the bill, it kind of addresses what I was trying to work on a couple of years ago. But I think the amount for full coverage is a little bit light. You know, with the gray markets we've had this past year, soybeans over $15 a bushel and corn $7 a bushel, you could rack up that total with about 10,000 bushels of soybeans and 9,000 bushels of corn. So my amendment would just simply raise those limits of full coverage on these short durations from 200,000 to 300,000, and I would hope you'd see that, Representative Cha, as a friendly amendment.
Representative Cha.
You know, Representative Anderson, I do see it. And I think third time's the charm, so I would accept it. Thank you.
Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the A6 amendment, say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. The ayes have it and the motion prevails. The A6 amendment is adopted. We'll move on to testimony. The first one is Commissioner Tom Peterson. And members, because we are a bit short on time here, please keep your testifiers, please keep your testimony to under 2 minutes so we can try to get through all the testifiers for this really important bill. Commissioner Peterson, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and members, Tom Peterson, Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and you've already heard pretty extensively from the department on this issue, and I'm not going to belabor those points. I'm really... I think it's really important to hear from the farmers that are here that will tell the stories about what happened with them. And I really appreciate the work that the committee is doing on this in both bodies and the stakeholders, because I think it's an important issue that we made, and you know, and we're making progress on this bill. And I want to commit as commissioner to continue to work on these issues as we put forward. We also have Mr. Milanowski is here today to answer any questions, and don't know in our 2 minutes if he wants to add anything. So,
please identify yourself before the record and proceed.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson. Thank you, Chair Vang. Representative, my name is Nick Milanowski. I'm the program manager of the Fruit, Vegetable, and Grain Program. I'm tasked with managing regulation of all the grain buyers in the state, as well as executing on bond claims and investigations. We've worked hard on this language, worked with other states, and looked at best practices and best cases in other states, and put that together here. And I think you'll hear from some of the farmers today about real-life applications of where this bill can really help them. So, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you, Nicholas. The next testifier we have is Matt Ashton from New Vision Cooperative. Over Zoom, if you can identify yourself before the committee, proceed. Matt Ashton, if you're speaking, we don't hear you. Okay, we'll move to the next testifier, Gary Wirtish, president from the Minnesota Farmers Union. Thank you for being here today. It's good to see you. Please identify yourself before the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Vang and the committee, and Gary Word is president of the Minnesota Farmers Union. I really appreciate you holding this committee here and Representative Chaw for bringing this bill forward. And I also want to thank you, too, being able to testify quick, and I would do it very short because Chairman Vang did a very nice, or Representative Chai did a nice job. I'm also a township supervisor. I need to leave right after this to get back to be at my township annual meeting. You know, we've been talking about this for a long time, and, you know, there's various things, and I really want to thank the chairman and the Department of Ag. Department of Ag has put a lot of time into this, a lot of years into trying to come up with the right solution and, you know, something that'll work for Minnesota farmers and the communities. You know, the ultimate goal is to get this passed. Once that fund is built up, we all would never hope that fund never has to be used, because that's ultimately what we want. The farmers, that way the farmers are protected and, you know, there'd be no cost off of them forever. But this really is, you know, it's not a bailout to the farmer. It's not a bailout to the elevator. Representative Chaw did mention it. This is for the communities, you know, because anytime an elevator goes bankrupt and can't pay the farmer doesn't get his check and sometimes gets, on the average, he's been getting a 10 to 11 cents on a dollar what he's owed. That's all money that doesn't go into their local community. That's all money that doesn't go supporting their local grocery store, the machinery dealers, into their school district. That's the bottom line here. And I think that's, you know, I really want to thank everybody that's worked on this. And we have the stark example of the Global Foods one recently. The Iowa producers are going to get 90% of their payment up to $300,000. That's how their indemnity fund is set up. Our producers are going to wait, we don't know how long. They might wait years. So that's really a stark example how this fund can work. And with that, I will thank you for letting me give my testimony, and now we'll leave. Unless I have a question, I'll leave to go do my constitutional duty as a township officer.
All right. Thank you, President Gary. Next testifier is Martin Phillips from Blue Sky Farms. Thank you for being here. If you can please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Martin Phillips, and I'm here to testify for the Grain Indemnity Fund. We're a third-generation small Minnesota farm south of Mankato. We're certified in 42 different crops, raising organic vegetables and other things. We host a U-Pick Pumpkin event each year without charging an entrance fee, relying on our pumpkin, vegetable, ornamental, and concession stand sales to bring low-cost entertainment to families across southern Minnesota and northern Iowa. In 2021, we had an organic corn contract with Pipeline Foods of Hope, Minnesota, to sell them our 2020 organic corn harvest that was scheduled for delivery to their facility in July of 2021. We started hauling on 6/14 of 2021 with the last delivery made on 6/29 of 2021. They wanted the corn as soon as possible, and we kindly hauled all 16 semi-loads as quick as we could, totaling 15,093 bushels. On July 8th of 21, we were informed that Pipeline Foods had filed a company-wide bankruptcy Chapter 11 in Delaware on all of its creditors. We are a small farm of 420 acres with little land owned of the 420 acres. The resulting loss amounts to $112,175. We had an operating loan with Compeer Financial that we could not pay off except by using monies that we had set aside for paying land rents that, of course, went unpaid. Still today, we have not recouped a single penny, and the struggle still goes on. One of the biggest eye-openers is that Pipeline Foods is only required to post a $500,000 bond. That bond was meant to help reimburse unsecured creditors in the event of the bankruptcy. The bankruptcy court has sent us a letter suggesting that we might receive 0.9 to 1.1% of our losses, and still nothing has been resolved in regards to the bond. The bankruptcy court has now demanded that the Minnesota Department of Ag send them all the information in regards to this bond and what each farmer might be owed. Their letter of intent is to make sure that no farmer or unsecured creditor will receive too much money in comparison to the farmers in other states, that there might be a more fair settlement overall. So what this has done to us is destroyed a credit rating in the mid-700s and reduced it to the mid-500s. This has wiped out many past profitable years of income and put this small farm's life in jeopardy. Life is always hard on a small farm, and losing access to credit resources not only limits your growth potential, but also your quality of life for each member of the farm and the children who plan on working on the farm in the future. In 2022, we had two organic soybean contracts with Global Processing, one for $32.50 a bushel and the other for $36 a bushel. And the organic soybeans were to be delivered in January of 23. In October of 22, Global Processing filed a company-wide bankruptcy, Chapter 11, in Iowa. I have been told they only had a $50,000 bond in Minnesota. The good news is that we have not delivered the organic soybeans. The bad news is that when the bankruptcy court in Iowa releases the contracts, which it still has not, from Global Processing, we can sell wherever we can, and the current market is $22 a bushel. The difference in what we had it sold for and what we will get now will be a negative 115,857 bushels. So we're talking about over a two-year period, $227,000 missing from our budget. Now it's been...
Mr. Phillips, if you could please wrap up your thought.
All right. In closing, you know, the small farmers, along with the big farmers, were the very backbone of our local society and the food producers of our great nation. My wife and I thank you for all your hard work concerning this issue to protect the farms in this state. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin, for sharing your story. The next testifier is, Matt Ashton. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed, please keep your testimony under 2 minutes.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. I apologize for earlier. I was muted. I just want to thank the committee and the chair.
Please speak louder into the mic, please, Matt.
My name is Matt Ashton. I'm the CEO at New Vision Co-op in Brewster, Minnesota, where we have over 2,200 active members. We currently handle about 65 million bushels of corn and beans from our producers. And certainly we support and understand the hardships of bankruptcies and things like that with the grain dealers that have been spoken here today. My challenge to the committee to consider is the regulations and the oversight that comes with the people who have the grain dealer's license. The vast majority of the people and the individuals and the co-ops and the grain dealers that have grain dealer's licenses are ethical and above board. My challenge to this committee when you're looking at this is, what are you doing to regulate finances, audits, things of that nature, to make sure that everybody understands who the grain dealer's license goes to, who's buying the grain dealer's license, and who's behind the grain dealer's license. So in the interest of time, I will be done, but I appreciate your time and your support and letting me speak today.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Our next testifier is Chad Sanner from Hope, Minnesota. If you can please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Chad Stannard. I'm here to testify regarding the Grain Indemnity Fund. I am a grain buyer that has went through two grain elevators filing bankruptcy within the last 5 years. Yes, both of those elevators were at Hope, Minnesota, and I was the grain merchandiser with my name on most of those contracts. Bonding has been inadequate for every grain buyer in Minnesota. It only protects 7 to 11%. Pipeline Foods, I was a grain merchandiser there for 2 years. 5.5 million in claims. That means $5.5 million in farmers' lost dollars. Just 9% of bond coverage payout to farmers. That was only $500,000 of the $5.5 million. Global Processing, that bankruptcy is currently in process. 1 million of farmer claims. That's just 5% of bond coverage, approximately $50,000 that will be covered. 15 states have indemnity funds. Most importantly, your surrounding states, Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin. And for the fact, Minnesota is the fourth largest corn producing state, third largest soybean producing state last year. The indemnity fund is faster payout and better protection. This cost is approximately $2 for every $1,000 of coverage. It's very cheap insurance. As of right now, when farmers call me, one thing that they do not want to do is haul into Minnesota. I have personally seen that farmers will haul out of state, particularly the farmers that are here to testify, knowing that they will be protected in other states. Minnesota is losing grain business, and they're also losing commerce in Minnesota because of that. I close with this. One particular morning, a farmer called me from southern Minnesota with the most emotional voice and said this: I have 5 children. I give money every week to church. I pay my bills. I lost $75,000 with the pipeline bankruptcy. Keep in mind, this is not including fuel, fertilizer, or the seed costs that I've already spent. This was my family's income for the year. He didn't know how to get through this, let alone to provide for his family. I used to say as a grain buyer that it needs to be a win-win. The end user needs to make money, the elevator, and also the farmer. I challenge you that we need a system to protect the farmer to get paid. Without the farmer, there's no elevator and no end users. Thank you.
Thank you, Chad. Our next testifier is Brian Herbs from Herbs Farms. If you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today. For the record, my name is Brian Herbst. I farm in southeast Minnesota. We have a small family farm. It's 2,000 acres, but today everything is about that size. We also diversify that farm with a custom hog feeding operation. It helps level out the ups and downs in markets. I am one of the fallouts of the pipeline bankruptcy. Unfortunately, I made the top 20 list, which is not the kind of list you want to be on. My loss was $350,000. So I'm just here to say that we're a fourth generation farm. I have 2 young sons that have just come into the business over the last 5 years, and we will seriously feel that loss for not only months, but probably years to come. The things that we can expand with young people, and we heard today in testimony about the Young Farmer Program. Well, this isn't doing our farm much good at all, losing that kind of money, which had been profit to use to expand. Again, to respect the time, I want to talk about just 2 things. And let's be clear that the bonding system is a failed system. And I want to, just for all of you that don't understand, I'm going to put it in kind of layman's terms. We can, as a farmer, we can sell grain 2 different ways. We sell it as cash, and that is when I load up my truck and I drive up to the local elevator and I dump my product off there. They put it in their bin, and they decide what to do with it, perhaps over a period of time. Okay, they'll probably sell it to the ethanol plant or send it to the river to go overseas. I don't know. That's called a cash contract, and that is covered by bonds, all right? But the bonds just aren't big enough to do much. But in actuality, I believe in Minnesota, 85% of all the sales, the contract sales by farmers, is by what they call voluntary extension of credit sales. and a voluntary extension of credit sale is not covered by bonds. So if I take my grain to an ethanol plant, that's a great place. Probably 5 hours later, that grain is made into some sort of a mash, and 5 days later, you'll find it on a railroad car going to the east or the west coast. Okay, I have voluntarily given up my commodity to somebody to get it going down the chain. All right, and for that, and that was also the case with pipeline. Also, they wanted my grain, so I can't go back to the elevator, pick it up, and go home. I'm left just with nothing.
Brian, if you could please wrap up your testimony.
Second point is risk management. The things that we are going to be able to control and not control on the farm. I can't control the weather. I can't control world economics. I can't control so many things. But I can control how I operate my farm. I can hedge grain and protect myself there. I buy crop insurance, wind and hail insurance, all these things. This indemnity fund, I cannot stress enough how important that is. Let's make it similar to what the FDIC does with banks. They protect their customers by this kind of protection. This indemnity fund would do similar, and I pray to the good Lord that we will never use it. It's just there for the protection. So I hope that I have, with my testimony, given you a little glimpse of how important this is, and I challenge you to look at this with great need. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Brian, for your testimony. The next testifier is Jim Falk from Falk Seed Farm. If you can please identify yourself before the record and proceed.
Chairman Vang, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today in support of establishing a grain indemnity fund. For the record, I'm Jim Falk. I'm the fourth generation to operate our family farm in Swift County. Farm with my wife, Karen, and my son, Andrew. I'm also the president of Falk Seed Farm, Inc., a seed processing facility that's been in business for 38 years. Our main business is selling certified seed, but we do process some food-grade soybeans, so I've been a bonded grain buyer or licensed grain buyer for approximately 25 years. In 2020, MDA implemented the most recent changes to the grain buyer's law, requiring more financial reporting of all grain buyers. This new mandated requirement to file financial audits and financial reviews was not well received by the industry, and it won't solve our problem, but it will cost the industry a lot of time and a lot of money to comply. I had the privilege of serving on MDA's Grain Advisory Group in 2022. That resulted in the MDA report issued to this committee on February 15th. I commend the staff of MDA and their professionalism in providing great detail regarding the grain buying facility failures over the last 8 years. And the fact that our current system is failing in its objective to protect Minnesota farmers. Minnesota ranks poorly as one of the worst states that provides farmer protections from grain buyer failures. MDA supports the establishment of a grain indemnity fund similar to what exists in 14 other states. Not everyone in the group was in agreement, but honestly, there were no other real solutions offered that did not look like what we already have, just with higher levels of bonding and more reporting. Let's be perfectly clear. These new requirements implemented in 2020 did not prevent the failure of Pipeline Foods in 2021 or Global Processing in 2022, which will result in millions of dollars of losses for our Minnesota farmers. The report was provided to both the House and Senate committee. I just want to highlight a couple items that are actual quotes or submissions from the actual bullet points listed in the report. 7 failures in 8 years, over $14 million in claims against $1.02 million in bonds. Executive summary under conclusion regarding financial reporting, it states, quote, it was evident through 3 meetings that the additional cost to license holders with no clear metrics or in-depth evaluation by the department is not serving the intended purpose. Bonds at the current, unquote. Bonds at the current rate aren't serving the purpose they were intended to. Additional regulations won't solve issues with protections for sellers, but may increase costs to license holders. Additional regulations were sold during last changes as an alternative to increasing protections. That hasn't worked to this point. So let's stop pretending we can put another Band-Aid on this failed system that's been broken for years and has caused so much pain to our Minnesota farmers, who are left to fend for themselves, shocked that their government has failed them. The evidence in the report is clear to me and should be to everyone that bonds will never be the answer as they don't cover delayed price contracts, which are used extensively by farmers to manage their income from year to year. And as evidenced in the report, bonds only paid 6.2% of the total claims on the five failures that have been settled as of 2019. The idea that more reporting will somehow fix the problem isn't logical when in 2022, Global Processing filed bankruptcy within 2 months of getting their grain buyer's license. Certainly, there is testimony today opposed to MDA's proposal to establish a grain indemnity fund. So you have to ask yourself why. The current system is broken. We need to fix it. Why is there opposition to a system that has been proven in other states and would actually protect our family farmers from losing their farms or life-changing setbacks, not to mention farmers who can't handle the stress of missing payments and having to go to mediation or worse? And farmers who don't want the protection cannot out the program. The statute obviously exists with the intent to protect farmers when a grain buyer fails to pay on delivered grain. Our current system is failing to accomplish its intended purpose. Again, I thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you, Jim, for your testimony. I believe those are all the testifiers I have in my notes. There are also two added letters from Minnesota Farmers Union and six grain buyers that is now posted on the agriculture website. Members, I know we gotten permission to go an extra 10 more minutes. I want to make sure we have a little bit of discussion on the bill. And so thank you for staying a little bit over time. Discussion to the bill as amended. Reps Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the discussion. And if we go a little bit over, I think that's fine because this is a very important topic, so thank you. Just a couple of questions. You know, we talked about voluntary extension of credit. Maybe the department could stop back up. And I'm looking at an old copy of the bill here. On page 2, begin at line 18, a transaction that does not meet the provisions of voluntary extension of credit is a cash sale. Does that mean we're excluding something here that becomes a cash sale? Or, again, go over one of the farmers testifying saying that a voluntary extension of credit was not covered by bonding. So I want to make sure that that's covered here in this indemnity bill.
Manager Nicholas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson. When a contract, a voluntary extension of credit contract, fails to have specific terms, including the signature that acknowledges that it's a contract, it defaults to a cash sale. That's language that exists in the law today, and this is similar to that.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just quickly then, we talked about cash sales I'm asking about delayed price grain. When you actually the farmer loses possession of that grain, it's no longer his. The elevator can sell it, it's gone. Coverage about the DP grain in this contract, in this bill, I should say.
Manager Nicholas.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, when a grower delivers grain, they can opt to put it on a contract currently or sell it as a cash sale. Cash sale requires that they're paid within 48 hours of the delivery of grain. Anything that extends that payment term is considered a voluntary extension of credit contract. Of course, they could also elect to put it on a storage contract or put it in storage and have access to that grain later on. Under this bill, voluntary extension of credit contracts would be covered to a certain extent. That is covered. I apologize. That is covered starting on at line 3.26 and continues through 4.12.
Representative Anderson. Further discussion. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank Representative Cha for bringing this bill forward. Thank you to the group of folks who worked on the recommendation through the department, and especially thank you to the testifiers and condolences. I remember the day that the Pipeline Foods bankruptcy was announced, and it was completely devastating, and I'm not a grower. So it, you know, affected our family farms. It affected people's employment. The ripple effects are many. So thank you for sharing your very difficult experiences and stories with us. Thank you, Madam Chair. Further
Questions or discussion? Closing remarks, Representative Cha.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Chair Vang. I want to thank the co-authors and authors of this committee. You know, I especially want to thank Representative Hansen for his leadership and Representative Frederick for his support in this bill. I want to thank to the Governor's Office, MDA, Farmers Union, Stu especially, and, you know, those testifiers that were here to testify on this bill. I also want to thank my colleagues across the aisle for working with me on this bill, and this is how bills should be done. I want to leave us with highlighting this bipartisan support for HF2718, that all those that are invested in this committee is committed to addressing issues within the agricultural community. And I want the testifiers in here to understand that. And I want everyone in this room and those that are watching to know that we as a committee on both sides of the aisle have Minnesota families' interests as a priority. So thank you.
All right. Members, earlier I made the motion to lay the bill over. That just means the committee has possession. But it is noted that we need to amend the motion to be referred to judiciary. And so, Representative Anderson, do you have a question?
No, I think that's okay, Madam Chair. Just wondering, will the bill come back here again, or will we not see it again in this committee?
I don't think it needs to come back, but we will see it again in part of the omnibus discussion.
Omnibus bill, you said?
Yeah.
Which omnibus bill?
The agriculture omnibus, I believe.
Well, then it will be back here again.
I don't think it needs to be formally motioned to be referred back to the agriculture committee. But I think we can, let me talk with staff behind it if we need to, and the chair of judiciary first. And then I can confirm with you later, Representative Anderson.
No, my point, Madam Chair, thank you, is that if it is back here part of the omnibus bill, there'd be another chance to offer amendments if we would so choose, correct?
That's correct. All right. Any further questions about the new motion to amend to refer to judiciary? Seeing none. All those in favor of the motion to re-refer House File 2718 as amended to the district committee, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say nay. The House File 2718 as amended is referred to judiciary committee. Members, there are two bills that we did not get to today. We will reschedule those bills and post that in advance. This week on Thursday, we will have two committees, both on our regular time and then later in the evening. So please make sure that that is included on your calendar. We are approaching deadlines, and so we want to make sure that we are giving all these bills a much-needed discussion. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.